101.9 High FM.
101.9.
101.9 High FM.
101.9
High FM.
It is 101.9. 101.9
High FM.
High FM.
High FM.
High FM.
I've got the power!
Unleashing 101.9 megahertz of power.
Hi everybody, welcome to Chai Cooking Corner. I'm Adrienne Bugatti from Kashering Your Life. So for those who don't know me, my whole business is on teaching people how to cook on a budget and to save money in their kitchens. So today I decided to have a look at the kitchens. And what do we really need in a kitchen? I have a weakness. My weakness is kitchen gadgets. I collect gadgets like most women collect shoes. You name the gadget, there's a very good chance I not only have one, but because I keep kosher, I'll have probably two or three. So I decided that we needed to declutter the kitchen. I invested in a kitchen gadget that takes over about 12 other gadgets, and an investment it is. I will be paying this thing off for a very long time. It's called a Thermomix. So now it makes some of my fancy kitchen gadgets slightly obsolete, and I'm decluttering. And as I was decluttering, I was thinking about all the things that we have in our kitchens that we really don't need. And how do we set up a kitchen when it's a new home, when you've just got married, or you've just moved out of home, or your kids are moving out and you want to help them set up their kitchen, you know, so that they can have healthy meals without having to come home every night and bum off you. So what we started with was the most important things. So my first thing is knives. Now, I have about 10 knives, everything from carving knives to a double-edged paring knife or peeling knife, you know, to peel fruit. I have a left-handed utility knife, which has been a wonderful thing as we have a few lefties in my house. And the right-handed knives are a little more difficult to learn to use. So it's been a little longer to get some of mine cooking. So the first thing we need is two very, very sharp knives. The one is a large chef knife. That is great for cutting things like butternut, for cutting your gem squash in half, or your pumpkins, anything large. Then there's the small utility knife or a medium utility knife. This is for slicing and dicing of more smaller items like your baby marrows, your carrots, things you don't really need a large knife for, although I use my chef knife for pretty much everything. Those are the two you really need. I have one more knife that I love, and that is a serrated utility knife. Some people call it a tomato knife because it does, serrated does make cutting tomatoes a little easier. So those are the three that I tend to use over and over again, and the others gather dust sitting in their knife block. The one thing that I did learn from Chef Alan Bender was to keep your knives as sharp as possible. This prevents them from slipping while you're using them, and that also then prevents you from cutting your fingers. Not to say that it won't happen. Believe me, we've all had our nicks and cuts. Pesach time is the usual time for those kind of injuries because people are using knives that they haven't used the whole year, and they're still fairly sharp because they get used for 1 week out of every year. The next thing you need is a good vegetable peeler. Don't get caught by the gimmicks. A vegetable peeler that fits in your hand, that is nice and sharp. So I did spend a little on mine. I got myself a nice, fancy, expensive one, but it peels everything. I do have those rounded ones that are supposed to peel potatoes or all those kind of things. I even once owned a battery-operated vegetable peeler. What a pain that was. I think we used it twice. It just really, you've still got to use your, you know, a little bit of elbow grease to get your peels going. So that's some of the things that you need to look at. What are the foods that you are making most of, and which vegetable peeler will suit you the best? The next thing was my four-sided grater. Can't get rid of that because all four sides have their own purpose. So you start with the large side, which is what most of us know, for grating everything from cheese to carrots to onions, even if you can stand the tears. Then it has a smaller side, which I use for sometimes for cheese, but often for chocolate, to grate chocolate on to decorate ice creams and things like that. and then the slicing side. So you don't need a fancy cheese slicer. If you run it down the side where it's got the large slices, you can get your cheese slice. You can slice potatoes quite thinly. You can slice any vegetable very thinly on the side to get nice little sheets. So if you're making something fancy like vegetable chips, which are easy to make, but they just add a little touch of class, you know, that's the perfect thing to do it. If you need long slivers of cucumber, or you want to make your baby marrow into pasta noodles for lasagna, then that's the perfect side of your grater. The other thing is, for most people are unsure of what that side of the grater is. They come out like in sharp points. So it's not a normal grating edge. It's these sharp points that you use. And that one is actually for zesting of your citrus fruit. Zesting is where you grate the skin of a lemon or an orange or whatever it is to add flavor into a food. Orange zest or lemon zest just adds so much concentrated flavor into any cooking that you're using. I often like to add it to things like mayonnaise or even yogurt to just give it that little brighter flavor. So that's what you need. The next thing that I want to talk about in your kitchen is your mixing bowls, your storage bowls. Now, we all complain, I know I do, I must have 1,000 bowls at least. I got rid of a whole lot. I have 3 bowls now that fit into each other, and I've graduated over the years from the plastic bowls and glass bowls, which eventually broke, to 3 stainless steel bowls. My stainless steel bowls, each one is a different size, and they fit into each other to make up space. My suggestion is, though, if you've got a very, very small kitchen, is to find bowls that have got lids with them. This way they serve a dual purpose. You've got your storage as well as your mixing bowl to use. And mixing bowls are quite important as well. There's a term called mise en place, which means getting everything ready before you start cooking. And for me, this is a huge time saver. I know in the beginning I didn't do it, and I know a lot of people don't. You don't read your recipe through, and you don't read the steps of how to make the food. So you land up chopping your onion only to realize that while the onion is cooking, you're really supposed to actually be doing something else. So mise en place basically means getting everything prepared before you even start. So if you needed chopped carrots, your carrots are chopped, your chopped onions, your chopped garlic, whatever it is all ready in front of you. And that's where the 3 bowls come in, because you can have them all ready and prepped. Obviously, if you've run out of bowls, soup bowls work fine, or side plates, whichever it is, depending on what you're needing. So I have 3 of them. I do try and make sure that they are dishwasher safe if you're not going to use metal. Obviously, the metal bowls can't really go in the dishwasher. They tend to rust if they're not really good stainless steel ones. And your bowls have to depend also on your budget. You're not going to go out and buy the fanciest bowls at all, you know. And if you're not a great lover of your kitchen, if you don't want to spend all your time cooking, then it might be better not to buy expensive ones, but buy useful ones. And you can find them, you know, at any of the supermarkets in different colors. So that's another easy thing to do to differentiate what they're for. And then the next thing is your storage. Everybody needs storage. And your best to look at is ones that can go into your freezer, that can take the microwave, and that are dishwasher safe, because more and more people are buying dishwashers in order to save money and reduce electricity and to save water. That's quite an important thing. And they really do work. The newer ones work better. The older ones, you do have to rinse before you put your stuff into the dishwasher. So another storage option is, when you're looking at the stores, you'll often find them, they're the packs of about 20 pieces, it says. So it's usually 10 storage containers with 10 lids, and those come in all sorts of different sizes. What I've learned to do with those is to put them all in together and put all the lids to the side so that you can stack them. It takes up less kitchen space. And that's another important thing. The next thing we want to do is to have a decent strainer. Now, you can have different kinds. You can have the sieve, which is mostly for flour and that kind of thing. It's a very fine mesh, Then you can have the colander, which is more of a bowl with holes in it where you can put your vegetables in to drain or to rinse, whatever you want to do. And then your strainer, which is when you want to pour liquid that's got, say you want clear soup, you just pour your liquid through from your soup through the strainer and the vegetables are left behind. Please remember to use those vegetables. They make a really, really good stock. So that's the other thing. The next thing is, and I know I had this, I still do, I've got a few, is the fancy blender or mixer gadgets, for dough, for whipping eggs, for whipping cream, for mixing cake batter. Now, if you're not a big baker like me, I cook. I'm not very good with baking. I do breads a lot, but the amount of dough I'm using, my Mixmaster or whatever you want to call them, doesn't really work. It's not big enough to hold the quantity of dough that I'm going to be making. So the thing you need to have then instead as a starter kitchen is a stick blender. Now you can buy them as sets. The stick blenders can come either just a plain stick blender, or it comes with a set where it's got a little whip inside it so that you can use it to whip up cream and things like that, or it's the blender with a large jug and you can use that to make shakes or dressings or whatever you want, or just the plain stick blender, which you can put straight into your pot and blend your ingredients. Just remember, be careful when you're putting it into a pot that there are no bones to damage the blades. And the other thing is a hand beater. If you're making a cake, there is nothing wrong with a standard hand beater. They work perfectly well for beating your eggs. They work perfectly well for whipping up your cream and just for making dough. And I find those are very handy. I know we all like to have these fancy gadgets for juicing and for this and for that. It's not really necessary. Juicing can sometimes be more hassle than it's worth. And a plain old juice fruit juicer works fine. Blenders work well too. If you're peeling and pipping your, de-pitting your fruit, putting it into the blender or a pot with a stick blender, yes, the juice may be pulpy, but that's what your strainer is for, to get a nice smooth things. Now, this one part of that I need to talk about is where, as my kids say, my nursing and OCD tendencies come out. It's chopping boards. I am fussy about chopping boards. So besides having my normal wooden bread board, I have three other boards, and they are not made of wood. And there's a reason for this. The wood absorbs all the juices. So if you're using a raw chicken or you're using raw meat or fish, those juices or blood get absorbed into the wood and you can't get rid of them. Short of like sanding it down and bleaching it, you're not going to get rid of it. It's one of the reasons why most people tell you cannot kasher a wooden chopping board. So I have three boards. The one board is used for for raw vegetables and fruit and for cooked foods only. So it's better to color code them. I know you can buy these really fancy sets that have little tags on. I've seen where it's got the fish and it says meat and it says vegetable. It's not really necessary. A good thick plastic board with a nice label on it that tells us what it is what works best. You can buy them individually with different color handles. So the one, like I said, one board is for fruit and vegetables and cooked foods. And this one can actually be wood because the juices of the fruit and vegetables are not going to cause any poisoning. I wouldn't use it for certain meats, especially if you're cooking rare, because the blood will go in and it needs a good scrub. The other two boards you need should be some form of really thick, heavy, durable plastic or glass so that they can withstand extremely hot water. One board is for the raw fish and one is for the raw chicken. Chicken carries salmonella. Having it raw on a board that cannot be cleaned thoroughly or sterilized is dangerous. We'll carry on after the ad break.
From talk to music, from Johannesburg to Israel, from sport to business, this is 101.9 High FM.
Like I was saying, raw chicken contaminates everything you touch. So if you're cooking with raw chicken, have a handy towel next to you Also soap and soap in your kitchen, because you're going to need to wash your hands between every time you touch the chicken. Every utensil you use with your hands that are dirty from the chicken runs the risk of contaminating your other foods. And that's an important thing. It has to be cleaned really, really well. Fish as well, raw fish. Fish carries food poisoning. Certain fishes, actually, when they're not stored properly, can cause quite a severe food poisoning. And it's a toxicity. It's not a fish allergy, although it can present as an allergy because you do get hives from it and breathing difficulties. But it is a pure it's a fish toxin. And those kind of fish would be things like your angel fish, which is a really nice, cheap fish to be using. But if you haven't stored it properly, you've got to be careful. Your white fish, your hakes and stuff are more safe for this, but I would still have a separate board. And they need to be washed and scrubbed thoroughly between each use. Like I said, my OCD comes out here. All of my chopping boards are scrubbed with steel wool and then washed really well. The problem with a wooden board is you cannot stick it in your dishwasher. It doesn't go. Wood is not meant for the dishwasher. It's too long in the water and it starts to damage it and you get cracks between, and that's where the food poisoning or the juices go in. So if it's possible, if it's not possible to have separate boards, make sure that you have a glass one, because glass is not porous. Most glass, it doesn't withstand the heat of the oven, so you can use it between things and it's easy to clean. An ordinary sponge is quite easy, and that's my next pet thing on my OCD and hygiene is sponges. You might as well use the toilet brush to clean your dishes if you're going to use sponges that you don't change at least every 6 weeks. Sponges harbor the most amazing bacteria because you're using them to clean everything from your glasses to your pots. So it is important that we change them regularly. Dishcloths, your drying towels can be changed and washed, I say, twice a week. And your actual washcloths, if you're still doing hand washing, those need to be done every second or third day. I know it took a long time in my house for people to get used to the idea, because you assume that you're putting it in the hot water with the dish soap, that it's actually going to be clean while you're cleaning. But it doesn't work that way. It's as if you're using your face cloth without rinsing it between soaps. And that's an important thing. So, having enough, and that is an expense that you need to book into, is having enough sponges to clean your pots regularly and to throw them out often. That's quite an important thing. I also buy myself very cheap toothbrushes to get into the handles and things every now and again. I don't do it often, where you can get into the handles, my dish trays, where you're drying your drying racks and things. What's the point of washing your dishes if you're about to put them back onto a dirty drying rack? So those are little things that we all tend to miss in our home unless you're watching them carefully. I also have an order in which I require my dishes to be washed if they're washing by hand. So on the days where we have no dishwasher available or there are not enough plates to put into a dishwasher, then it's got to be done by hand. And the way it works is if you've got a baby, your bottles have to go first. That is, without a doubt, your most important thing. And the next thing is we work it from touching your mouth to the stove. So the next thing that you're going to wash is your glasses, because those actually go directly into your mouth, and along with your cutlery, so your knives, your forks, your spoons that you are eating with. They go directly into your mouth, so you want them the most clean, and you want to wash them in the cleanest part of the water. The next one is your dishes. Now, what I usually do here with this is I take the dirty dishes, and I wash them in the dirty water, take them out, throw out my dirty water, and then refill. And then I wash again with clean. The reason I do this is because the first lot of dirty water is just to get the grease from the food off the actual food, and as my girls say, touching food that you don't know what it is in the water because you can't see it because it's so dirty is really rather yuck. I did have to buy them gloves to get them to do dishes, that I must admit. So it's important that you then use the water, clean water, wash your eating dishes, and then lastly your pots. Now, when you've got pots that have got stuff soaked into them or burnt onto them, I always put them aside. So I boil my kettle, I put them aside, I pour some boiling water with some soap into it, and I let it stand till the end of the wash, because by that time, all the stuff that's been burnt in has come loose, and it makes cleaning a lot easier. Right, so that's the end of looking at what you put into your washing and what you need in your kitchen. I'm just going to give you a quick recipe in the meantime for butternut. So a butternut sauce. This butternut sauce goes over just about everything, but it's my kids' favorite to pour over pasta. And it's really simple, not expensive, and you can change the flavor as you like it. So it's a medium butternut, usually about 700 grams. So if you're buying a whole butternut, my advice to you is slice it and then peel it. It does make it a lot easier. Otherwise, to buy a cubed butternut ready-made if that's what you would like to do. A tablespoon of oil. Now, for this one, I actually do like using olive oil because I like the bitter flavor of the olive oil in the butternut sauce. But any oil will work. Salt. If you're using coarse salt, you need to use a little less than you would with normal table salt. And remember, your salt is a flavor enhancer. So use it throughout your cooking rather than adding it to the end. And obviously pepper. Then I like mine fairly garlicky, so 5 cloves of garlic, but you can adjust that to your taste. You want them peeled. I use half a teaspoon of dried sage, 1/2 cup of either Oily Whip, or you can use 1/2 cup of water or milk or any other milk substitute. I like the Oily Whip. It gives it a much thicker, creamier flavor, so you could use cream if you really wanted to. And then the pasta of your choice, because it makes a great pasta bake. I've used it over meat. I've used it over potatoes, for anything. And then you can have your toppings to go over whatever you've poured your pasta sauce on. Parmesan cheese, toasted walnuts, fresh sage. I like burnt sage. So what I do is I take fresh sage and some butter. I brown the butter and then I fry the sage or saute the sage in the burnt butter and then crumble it over the top. It just adds an amazing flavor to it. So to start with, you preheat your oven to between 180 and 190, and using a sharp knife, trim the ends of your butternut and then slice it or cut it halfway, like lengthwise, and peel with a vegetable peeler. And then cut it into pieces. Remember to scoop out the seeds. Now, you can use frozen butternut for this. Just remember to use less liquid. Or you can use fresh chopped butternut that you bought at the store. The butternut needs to be cut into 5-centimeter chunks. And then you transfer that to a baking tray that has a slight rim over it. Toss it with some oil and your sage. And then sprinkle salt and pepper over it just for the flavor. Now, I prefer using fresh pepper. I like the bite, but ordinary pepper works fine. Just to sprinkle, don't use a lot. Please remember that salt enhances your flavor, whereas pepper will change the flavor. So use the pepper sparingly. Then scatter your garlic around. You don't have to chop the garlic or anything. And a trick that I've recently learned is you don't even need to peel the garlic. All you do is take your garlic cloves, take a knife, smash the garlic so that it splits open and put it on your tray. And it gives you the flavor. It makes it easy, you know, something a little less time needed. Roast the squash the butternut until it's really, really soft that you can put a fork in or a knife that won't, you know, doesn't meet any resistance. This can take anywhere from 30 to 40 minutes depending on the size of the butternut that you're using. Obviously, if you're using frozen butternut, it'll probably only take about 20 minutes to roast it. So be careful with that. Do remember that you need to toss it a little halfway through just so that the oil goes all over and that you roast it on both sides evenly and allow it to brown. Okay, remove and discard the skin from the garlic. So now you've baked your garlic, so it's nice and soft, so it's easy to take the skin off. You're going to transfer your cooked butternut and your garlic to a bowl where you can puree it. So obviously, if you've got a food processor, stick it in your food processor. If you've got a stick blender, put it in a deep enough dish that the stick blender can get to the whole thing. With the motor running, so you've got to keep it running, you're going to add your Oily Whip, your cream, your milk, your water, whatever you're going to use it, slowly until the food is properly processed and smooth. Then add 1 to 2 cups of water to continue smoothing it out and making it into a pouring sauce. And the water doesn't have a specific measurement. It's how runny do you want your sauce, whether you want it thick or smooth or thin. Once again, season to taste. Now, this is an important, I can't tell you enough, salt goes throughout your cooking. So as you're cooking, always add salt and taste. Taste what you're making. That way, you know, you get the flavor right. And remember, pepper can be added at the end, and it's always better to let the other people add the pepper because it does change your flavor. And then cook your pasta if you're going to use pasta or whatever you're going to use it on. If you're using the butternut as a steak sauce, cook your steak and allow it to rest. If you're using pasta, my suggestion is to keep a cup of the pasta water. And once you've drained the pasta, you pour the sauce over the pasta and stir it in really well, and then mix in as much of the pasta water as you need to make it, you know, a nice sauce. And that is how you do your pasta. You can then top it with whatever it is, roasted walnuts, chopped walnuts, almonds, sage, your cheese, whether you're using Parmesan, which I prefer, or any other cheese that you'd like to add. Mozzarella is nice. It makes the sauce quite stringy. You know, and there's your pasta sauce. And it tastes expensive, but isn't. And it's just very versatile. It also freezes really, really well. So you can make a big batch and freeze it, and you always have sauce for your pasta for the days where you have no idea what you're cooking today. The next thing is we're looking at, like, our herbs and spices. I have spoken about salt, which should be added throughout your cooking and enhances the flavor of your food. And then black pepper. This should be added at the end because it does change the flavor of the food. And add a little at a time as you go, tasting and stirring continuously till you get what you want your food to taste like. It's a good idea to keep the pepper on the table for people who like more spicy food because it is quite a spicy ingredient. I like fresh ground pepper, but ordinary table pepper, you know, is quite okay. The next thing is that you need to have in your kitchen is the mixed herbs. Okay. Your dried herbs are great. I have nothing against dried herbs. They're easy to use. You can store them for a long time, and they keep for a long time. So that's why, you know, my kitchen, pick a herb. Once again, I'm as bad with my herbs as I am and my spices as I am with my kitchen gadgets. You pick one. I probably have it in the cupboard somewhere. And sometimes, unfortunately, more than one. So I haven't been listening to my own, you know, advice. And I'm buying as I see them or think I need them. So I do have some slightly more expensive flavorings in my cupboard. Things like star anise and saffron. And then I discovered dehydrated ginger, which made my life a lot easier. But I'd keep fresh ginger in the fridge all the time anyway. So a mixed herb, a bottle of mixed herb, usually contains thyme, marjoram, oregano, and parsley. And it's great on meats and in stews. Then you've got the Italian herbs, which are also mixed herbs. That usually has a rosemary, thyme, basil, and oregano. And that is fantastic in Italian-style dishes or tomato-style dishes. If you prefer the fresh herbs, my suggestion is chop them up, wash them, and then freeze them in a little bit of a mixture of olive oil and water. The olive oil allows them to hold properly, and the water allows it to freeze without damaging the leaves of your fresh herbs. Now, the difference with using fresh herbs and dried herbs is the fresh herbs can only be added sort of towards the end of your cooking, and you use a lot more. Because they're fresh, they haven't been dehydrated, they're not shrunk, so they're using a lot more. When you're using dry herbs, you can add those any time you like. Because they've been dehydrated, they actually do well with cooking for a little longer. But there is no difference. The price is, you know, the same. Curry powder, use whatever strength or blend you want, and you put that in the beginning of your cooking when you need to saute your onion and garlic. And because it's a raw spice, it needs to cook into your food. My last bit tip of advice is to use newspaper to line my counter to help with keeping the counter clean and making cleanup easier. Thank you all again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you got some good tips out of it. I'm sorry it's a short show again today, but I hope it has helped you, and I hope it'll save you money. Go through your kitchen, look carefully. What haven't you used in at least a year? It's time to get rid of it. And remember, one person's junk is another person's treasure. Happy cooking and happy saving. Thanks. This is Adrian. Goodbye.